Thank you to all of you for joining me today. I want to specifically thank Dr. Jenny Berkovich, who sponsored this year, in greetings of happy birthday to Brian Aliba Basaralea and Talia Bas-Hana. I think Talia Bas-Hana might even be in the room. Happy birthday. Very nice. Thank you so much. I want to thank, of course, Neely for asking me to share some more Torah with you guys. I always enjoy speaking for the Neely group. Very intelligent, motivated, growth-oriented group of ladies. And I know you've all come today to learn about relationships, right? It's a Yartei Kala all about relationships. I'm sure you're going to hear wonderfully positive things and, you know, growth and all kinds of wonderful things, but today I'm here to talk about the less fun side of relationships. We're going to talk about approaching difficult relationships as an Eved Hashem. And I'm going to be presenting it through the prism of difficult familial relationships, and I'm going to explain why. This is a really hot topic because I found that while it's something that almost everyone struggles with, almost everyone has a family member that it's difficult for them to get along with. See? Here's some awkward laughter, some affirmation laughter. Still, almost everyone feels like it's just them, right? They feel like it's only them that has a difficult spouse, or it's only them that has an estranged sibling or aunt, or it's only them that has trouble in their in-law relationship, whether it be with a parents-in-law or a child-in-law. So everyone thinks they're alone, but why is this? Why do we feel like we're broken or we're damaged or our family shalom has gone past the expiration date, right? If we look in the Torah itself, we see so many stories of strained familial relationships. Think about it, right? Were Adam and Chava a paradigm of shalom bais? Did Cain and Hevel win a sibling award, or did they literally invent sibling rivalry from the first sibling relationship? You know, and then we go on to Noah. Did his children excel in kibud av v'aim, right? Or did some of them really fail quite royally, right, as the world was being put back together? So now for a little fun activity, we're going to turn it interactive. Okay, we're going to fast forward a little bit to our avos, some of our biggest role models. In Yahadut, in our Torah, and everything, okay? Let's talk about Avraham Avinu. Who can tell me what were the difficult family, familial relationships in the life of Avraham Avinu? Okay, he had two children that had a lot of trouble getting along, right? Bring it on, people. Sarah. Exactly. His wife wanted him to throw out his other wife. Can you imagine that? Hagar mocking Sarah, right? There was a very difficult, talk about a difficult sister-in-law. I don't know, is that even called a sister-in-law? No, I don't know what that's called, but there are two wives, right? Sister-wives, talk about a difficult sister-wives relationship. Sorry? Abraham and Lot, excellent. He had a very difficult relationship with his brother-in-law. Perfect. Anyone else? Avram and Terach, his own father, right? It was a difficult relationship with his own father. His father-in-law and his father was difficult. Okay, right, we had that, right? We had that before, but excellent. Yes, that was definitely... Okay, that wasn't a relative, though, but it was a difficult relationship. So he had, you know, trouble even beyond familial relationships. Okay, so I'm going to give my list now. And a lot of these are that we already have, that we've already mentioned, right? He had the difficulty where he almost had to go kill his son, right? That's also a difficult situation. His other son was off the derech, Ishmael. His wife threw out his other wife. His wife dies as a result of him going to the Akedah out of shock. He has a brother-in-law, right? We mentioned Lot, who was actually, we're told by the Midrash, he was his look-alike, right? So there was all kinds of complications with that. And he fought a whole war for him. And this brother-in-law was a stress on the family. And there were all kinds of situations with him. He was estranged from his father, etc. Now let's go to Yitzchak, okay? If we think that after that everything was peachy and keen, let's go to Yitzchak. What were the difficult familial relationships in Yitzchak's life? His children, Yaakov and Esav. Again, terrible sibling rivalry. Yeah, exactly. He had a brother-in-law that tricked his son so that he married one wife and then had to work for 7 years. So that's definitely not such a positive brother-in-law. So excellent.
His wife went around on ice.
Perfect. Yes. According to most approaches, his wife went behind his back to get the Bechora stolen from the actual Bechora, right? So we have that whole subterfuge with his own wife. Anyone else?
His daughter-in-laws were serving idols.
Okay, excellent. So issues with the daughter-in-laws, with the wife, with the children. I mean, this is pretty intense, right? Okay, do I have anything we didn't get? Let's look. Warring sons, wife been behind his back. Brother-in-law was no good. Okay, and his mother died while he had to be away from her for years because he was running from his life. Right after that incident, he never got to see his mother again. Now on to Yaakov. Bring it on, people. Yaakov's children, okay, right? That's a very intense one. Someone say something over here? His wives, exactly. The fighting between his own wives. Excellent. Okay, so we'll go through this. We'll go through this quickly. Wives were fighting over being with him. Children fought and deceived him. Difficult relationship with his brother, having to run from his life so his brother doesn't kill him, right? Thought his son was killed on a journey that he sent him on, right? And he felt guilty for years for that. And when he was asked by Paro about his life, what does Yaakov respond? He said his days were short and bad. Okay, so obviously there was a lot of familial stress on Yaakov. So the nature of these relationships we've described are as such that in some of them they could just check out, right? Avram and Lot were able to separate. And in some, they could not get away from each other, no matter what they did, right? That's Yaakov and Esav. We're told as a paradigm of the world, Esav sonet Yaakov, right? Esav hates Yaakov, and for the ends of time, we're always battling with the descendants of Yaakov, descendants of Esav. Aren't we as descendants of Yaakov? So somehow, my friends, family drama is built into the system. The people you are closest to can sometimes seem hardwired to drive you nuts, or even in the worst case, bring out the worst in you. But I'd like to suggest it's actually more hopeful than that. Because while all of those things are true, they're also designed by Hashem to help you grow. Now, while it doesn't look like that from the outside, I'm going to give an analogy from the Netziv. The Netziv says on a pasuk in Sefer Dvarim, the pasuk is Se'irim ale desha kiririvim ale esef. Okay, it's talking about different types of rain. And the Netziv explains there that this one kind of rain it mentions in the pasuk is the hardest rain. It's the rain that really beats down on the crops. And if you're looking at it from the outside in your comfortable home, it looks like it's destroying the plant and destroying the ground, right? It's such hard rain. But he explains that that is actually the rain that helps the plant grow the best. So obviously we're not talking about, God forbid, abusive relationships, but difficulties, and that is our exception, we're not talking about that in the whole shiur, but people that are difficult to get along with, believe it or not, Hashem makes them like that rain. We have the potential, if we unlock it, to grow the most from those relationships. Now, I heard a really incredible insight in a shiur from Gedalia Fenster, for anyone who listens to him, where he explains that when people daven for a difficulty to be removed, often they daven in the wrong way. How do many of us daven when we want something to be changed, right? Please, Hashem, please heal this person, take away their sickness. Please take away this difficulty. But he says, when you do that, it's wrong because it's like going to a debt collector and saying, here's my debt. Do you mind just tearing it up, you know, cutting it, making it go away? That's not how it works, right? You have to give something. You have to give something to the debt collector to erase your debt, right? So it's the same thing. When we have a difficulty, we need to go to Hashem and we need to say, please, Hashem, please help me do whatever I need to do in this situation to fulfill what you want me to get out of it, and then make the situation go away, right? Help me grow, help me change. Whatever I need to gain from this situation, help me gain that lesson or gain that growth or gain that potential, and then make the situation naturally improve. Because that's what Hashem wants of us. And that's what we're going to dig deeper about in the shiur today. How do we transform ourselves from bitterness about those difficult relationships to betterness as human beings? Now, a quick caveat. This is an ambitious topic, right? It really needs like an entire series. So please just look at this as a primer. We're going to talk about a few tips, a few etzos, advice, and then I'm also going to try to give a targeted tip for the most common difficult familial relationships. So, if those don't fit one of yours, hopefully I'm very confident you'll be able to apply them to whatever difficulties you are experiencing in a different relationship. Okay, we're going to split the approach into three categories. Mindset, that's what we're working on in the background, right? Setting yourselves up for technical success in the relationship. Okay, we're going to explain more what that term means when we get to that topic. And the third category is behavior. Okay. Behavior. Yes, no problem. Mindset, setting yourself up for technical success, and behavior, when you actually have to interface with the person. You actually have to be in the throes of the relationship. So we're going to start with mindset. So I know this is a common one that people say, but the reason it's common is because it's so important. First and foremost, really, never compare your relationship with the parallel relationship of another person. Gedalia Fenster said in another shiur, and this is very beautiful, he said, the essence of knowledge is realizing that we know nothing. Mm-hmm. Right? We even have that in Pirkei Avos. It says, one of the signs of chachma, of a chacham, is someone who can say when they don't know something, that they don't know it. Okay, what we see in other people's relationship is like a sliver of what the relationship is. It's only what we see with our own eyes, right? We don't know what's going on in their head. We don't know what's going on in their heart. And we don't know what's going on behind closed doors. So when this person looks like they have everything made, right? It's not necessarily the case. In fact, we're only seeing a small fraction of what the relationship is. In fact, I'll give you an example. When I decided to tackle this topic, I spoke to some close friends about it. And I learned some things about these close friends I never knew. One close friend told me that her father was estranged from his parents for the rest of his life after he got married because his parents asked him, they didn't like his wife, and they asked him to pick between them and his wife. So can you imagine that? He was estranged from them for the rest of his life. Close friend told me this. Another close friend mentions her very difficult relationship with her in-laws and the things that she was going through with them that I had no idea about. And then there were the close friends that I already knew about the difficulties in their relationship. I have one close friend who she's been estranged from her sister for about 20 years, right? And so she's my age. That's pretty much her entire adult life. Another one who has a lot of difficulties with her sister-in-law. And the reason this is so important to think about and realize is because we understand from this that we're really not alone. Almost everyone has at least one difficult family relationship. And basically what we see from this is difficult familial relationships are a universal problem, right? It's something that people don't talk about a lot, but it exists when you're in such, you know, close quarters with people, you know, even in the wider circle of the wider family. It's just, like we said with our avos, built into the system. I'm going to give you a quote from Anne Lamott, one of my favorite writers, that speaks to this. She wrote, "If Earth is forgiveness school, family is your postdoctoral fellowship. Family is hard, 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 a crucible in which these strange things called identities are formed, and every member is consigned a number of roles to keep the boat afloat." The next important hashkafa outlook in the mindset of difficult relationship is to realize that everyone that is put in our lives is a shaliach of Hashem. No one gets a starring role in your story unless they're on Hashem's casting list. That's just how it is. And The Chavos HaLevavos, without the movie analogy, says basically exactly this. Everyone that's put in your life is a Shaliach of Hashem. And until you accept that, as hard as it could be with the difficult person, until you accept that, your approach to the relationship really won't do much. Because you're going to keep pushing it against it, feeling angry or bitter or even shortchanged, depending on the nature of the relationship. Okay, now we're going to move to the category of technically setting yourself up for success. This is a Revitzen-Spentner term about your relationship with your children. She's a parenting teacher. And she talks about in the parent-child relationship, when you see a problem that keeps happening, you need to technically figure out a way to set yourself up for technical success. For example, if your kids are always screaming in the car that they're hungry and they're always want nosh, so just keep a case of water bottles in your trunk and a box of snacks. Like, technical success. You'll have what you need. If your family every morning is running late and everyone's screaming at each other and there's high levels of stress, set everyone's alarm 10 minutes early. Like, just do it. Like, technically set yourself up for success by giving yourself more time. So this approach can really be used for all relationships, not just in the parent-child relationship. And the reason for this is, have any of you, I mean, for most of you have heard this quote, I love this quote, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So if you keep trying the same things in a relationship that's difficult and it keeps producing friction, a person needs to ask themselves, why do they keep doing that? Telling yourself, this time the person's going to take my feedback and change. This time the person's not going to be touchy and sensitive, right? This time it's going to be a fairy tale chag where no one gets on each other's nerves, right? How many times have we told ourselves that, right? We've got to try to take our blinders off and do new things. Look at the relationships from different angles. Sometimes that involves looking at from the angle of the other person, the difficult person, and seeing how are you coming off, right? What can you change, right? And when we do that, we have to try new things. To make the point clearer, another expression that I love, we should learn to expect the expected, not the unexpected. We should learn to expect the expected with the difficult relationships. And when we do this, we don't get angry each time anew at something that is bound to happen, right? It's like, otherwise it's like getting angry that it's snowing in winter, right? I mean, sometimes we have milder winters here, sometimes we have less mild, but when it snows, like, why are we so upset? We know, winter it snows. It's annoying, but that's just expecting the expected. So if people are a certain way, we need to expect they're going to continue to act that way and put things in place to shield ourselves from future disappointment, right? You can tell yourself, there they are doing their thing again, right? When you're dealing, let's say, with a person with a temper and they're mad at you again, think about it like a barking dog, right? A barking dog is a lot of noise, but you don't let it into your heart. It's just noise, okay? They're angry at me again, bark, bark, bark. This is a rigid personality who's being inflexible again, bark, bark, bark. It's noise, but it doesn't have to go into your heart. The next thing to consider is, and this is very important, Is this a difficult person in general, or is this just someone that the person and I rub each other the wrong way? If it's someone where you rub each other the wrong way, there's what to be worked on there. That can be improved. That's actually good news. There's what to improve with that. But if you're dealing with a difficult person, you have to accept that it's very unlikely you're going to change them, as much as you might want to. So some key questions to ask yourself when you're trying to figure out, is this a difficult person in general, are the following. One, does this person make everything about them? Are they willing to change, or are they open to seeing the other side? Are they someone who can apologize and admit wrong? That's a very important one. Do they have a temper? And if so, where do they fit in the Pirkei Avos litmus test? I know a lot of us have probably seen this Mishnah many times, but now I'd like to look at it with a different perspective. It really helps us understand this. Okay, the Mishnah says in Pirkei, There are four types of temperaments, which is really talking about people that get people's relationship to anger. Someone who's easy to become angry and easy to be appeased. So that's someone that Pirkei Avos tells us, his gain disappears in his loss, right? Like, even though he's appeased easily, if he gets angry all the time, it's going to be very off-putting to people. But still, if they're more easily appeased already, there's a little something you can work with there. The second category is hard to become angry and hard to be appeased. So his loss disappears. Hard to become angry and easy to be appeased. Oh, sorry, no, we didn't do the second one. Hard to become angry and hard to be appeased. Okay, his loss disappears in his gain. So you know when you've angered someone who's hard to get angry, you really should reflect, maybe I really did do something wrong here, right? Because this is not someone who gets angry a lot. Hard to become angry and easy to be appeased. That's a tzaddik, right? It's a very hard mila to be at. Easy to become angry and hard to be appeased. That is a difficult person. That is just a difficult person to work with. Now, after you explore these questions and you assess if you're dealing with a difficult person, if they are a difficult person and you've assessed that, you have to be able to accept that you're likely not going to change them. And therefore, what you have to do is two things. One, create boundaries in dealing with them. And two, decide how much you want to opt into interacting with them and opt out of interacting with them. Now, again, this is the setting yourself up for technical success category. So you think about situations where most of the friction is happening. So for example, if it's Yom Tov, right? If it's just too hard to spend Yom Tov together. So maybe you shift to not spending Yom Tov together or not spending Yom Tov in the same exact house where you can't have a break from each other, right? A very insightful Bubby that I really respect. She has a very big family, and she told me she went away with them this Pesach. To somewhere in Florida, the whole family. And she said, you know what? It was very stressful being in the house. I felt like there was never any break. So for the second day, she just moved somewhere else. She wanted to be with the family, but she wanted to have her space too, right? So realizing that she needed that space was very important for her. Travel can also be another example, right? Like sometimes families take vacations together and it's too close quarters, right? It's just, again, too much time together, or people have different views of what they want vacation to be. One wants it to be all sitting on the beach. One wants it to be touring, and it can just cause friction. So maybe you travel apart. Maybe you don't do that anymore. But finding ways to figure out when's the best time to opt in with this person and when's the best time to opt out. And again, acceptance is key. Once you can accept what you're dealing with, you can first and foremost stop playing the chess game of tiptoeing around and wondering what you could have possibly done wrong this time when the atomic bomb is ultimately set off, and also creating communication just so as to not offend them, and then, you know, sometimes it can still offend them. I'll give you an example. A couple months ago, I had to send an email to a difficult person in my life, and I had to give them some feedback on something, and I spent a week on this email, ladies. And I'm a professional writer. So I knew that I had done everything I could to craft this communication just so. And finally, after a week, I said to myself, I could literally rewrite this email 90 times in 90 different ways and still get the same exact result. So I put in my shtadlus, I did my best, and I'm sending it off. What happens? It was structured very nice, right? Whenever you have to give someone feedback, you start with praise, you start with thanks, whatever you need to do, then you get to the heart of the whatever. The person read the email from the middle. Didn't even start at the beginning. So after I spent a week on it, it literally, I could have never predicted that. How could I predict they were going to read the email from the middle and get offended, right? So again, there's no way to predict the behavior of other people. And so in situations with difficult people, we have to just tell ourselves over and over again, we can't change other people. We can only change ourselves and our own reactions. And we need to be flexible within ourselves to be someone who can be okay with the situation without it breaking us. And if we can do that, it'll ultimately make us stronger. In that situation with the email, I kept having to work on acceptance over and over again until my husband finally told me, you are now out of firing range. What they say or do can't hurt you like it used to. In A Farewell to Arms by Ernest Hemingway, he writes this quote that I love. The world breaks everyone, but afterward, many are strong at the broken places. And we know this even medically to be true. My daughter, several years ago, she broke her arm and she needed pins put in. It was a pretty serious injury. And I asked the doctor, I said, is her arm ever going to be the same again? And he said, you know what? It's actually, the bone is actually going to be stronger because it's going to grow around the pins. They ultimately took the pins out, but it will have more bone to it ultimately. So the broken places will make you stronger. But here's the second part of the quote, ladies. But those who will not break, it kills. Emotional flexibility is so important, right? Sometimes we have to break to heal, right? And sometimes we have to learn to be flexible, right? Emotional flexibility, I talk about this a lot in my book, actually, there's a whole chapter on emotional flexibility, is so important. We're even told in the Gemara. It says in the Gemara in Tanis, Le'olam yehi adam rach kekana velo kasha ke'erez. Flexible trees can do better in a storm because they can shift with the wind and they can take the impact in different ways. So now we're going to move to the third category, the behavioral piece. A key piece to managing these relationships is choosing what not to say, what to hold back. And this is a very big problem for people. It's very, 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 very hard to keep your mouth shut when you have a real zinger, right? It's just a very difficult thing to do. The Gemara has a beautiful piece on this. On the pasuk, Tola Eretz Al Blima, right? The world is held up by a string. That's the technical translation. But the Gemara has a more homiletic interpretation of this, which is that the Bolim Espiv piv is Mi Shebolo. Oh, the Tola Eretz Al Blima. The Blima part is. The whole world is held up, our rabbis tell us in the Gemara, by someone who closes their mouth during a fight. It is so hard to hold back that zinger that you're literally considered as if you're holding up the whole world by managing to do that. And when zingers are lobbed at you, even if you manage to keep your mouth shut, it's hard to... to have other people all keep their mouth shut, right? It's very helpful to keep in mind two sayings. One, hurt people are the ones that hurt people. And two, under anger is fear. Both of these should help us keep hurtful things that are said in context, realizing that the comments often have nothing to do with us and everything to do with the other person saying them. Alongside these considerations, we need to keep in mind that in difficult relationships, winning isn't everything, and having the last word is not the barometer of winning either. And even more so, and this would be helpful for us to realize in almost every situation in life, there's multiple planes of winning. I'm going to give you a great example of this. My daughter is in fifth grade at RECon, one of my daughters. And they have this year-long competition every year called Battle of the Books. And the girls, they have about 25 books. They're supposed to read however many they can of them. They're put into teams. And there's like a trivia competition at the end of the year. And you know, essentially they work on it every year. It happens to be that my son, my oldest son, when he was in this competition, there was four boys on his team. One of them was out sick. One of them was suspended. One of them didn't read any of the books. And it was just my son, who, Baruch Hashem, is a very good reader. And Mrs. Kleinman was his teacher. She could attest to this. She texted me this after the competition. She said Hershey single-handedly won the competition, meaning he just put himself to it, and he won it. Meanwhile, fast forward to now, one of my daughters is in fifth grade, and she was put on a very difficult team with people who no one wants to read the books. And I told her the story of her brother, and she said, okay, I'm going to do this. And I made her a little, I probably should have told her the story, because she read the books like so many times. I was like, how many times is going to read these 25 books? But she was very determined. What happens during the actual competition? It's over several days. They do this for like, there's like 3 afternoons that they do the competition with, you know, different groups, meeting with different groups. She comes home the third day in tears. And I said, what happened? And she said, I was this close to getting second place. It was the matter of one question. And when they asked, when the moderator asked the question, they asked it wrong to the other team. And I knew the other team would say the wrong answer because she asked it wrong. So I corrected her. And because of that, we lost because the other team got it right. And I said, what are you talking about? You won. You won the most important award that day. You won the Yashras Award. It doesn't matter if you win Battle of the Books. You won the Yashras Award. I'm so proud of you. And later that day, I got a text from one of her good friend's mothers who said to me, it was so funny, she didn't know me well, who's at home crying. She said, your daughter is so amazing. My daughter, her daughter was on the winning team, she came home and said, Hoovy is my best friend. She was so happy for me for winning. And I know how much the competition meant for her. And she was just so happy for me that I won. And I said, wow, Hoovy, you also won the Friendship Award. Like, there are so many multiple planes of winning here. And yes, you didn't get the trophy, and no one at school thinks you won Battle of the Books, but you won all of these things in the background. So in life, there's multiple planes of winning, right? And we see keeping our mouth shut, holding up the entire world, right? Having the right mindset, you know, not letting things drive us crazy. There's so many things that are more important than having the last word, and so many planes of winning. Now, before we go to the different relationships themselves, one more piece, and the general backgrounds of it. Compassion is one of the ways by which the Gemara tells us we know who's a Jew and who's not a Jew. We're told, Kol merachem al habrius biyadu shehu mizera shel Avram Avinu. Anyone who's a compassionate person, we know right away that they're one of the children of Avram Avinu. The kol mi she'eino merachem al habrius, and someone who doesn't have compassion, biyadu she'eino mizera shel Avram Avinu. It's as if they're not one of the children of Avram Avinu. So we see how important it is that we have compassion, and even more so to people who might not deserve it, because we're told also on the pasuk, Hashem tzilcha al yad minecha, Hashem is your shadow on your right hand. We're told that Hashem responds to us like a shadow. So when we're compassionate, even to people who don't deserve it, Hashem will be compassionate to us, even in situations where we might not deserve it. Right? When we have rachamim upon someone that we feel is wrong, Hashem will do that to us, even in situations when we're wrong. And on this last note of this section, forgiveness, forgiveness, forgiveness. I can't drive that home enough. Both in terms of the difficult person you're dealing with and in terms of yourself. Forgiveness is often a gift to yourself even more than the other person. Because often when we're upset in a difficult relationship or we're ruminating about it, we're really burning up our own energy and our own time trying to, you know, be righteously indignant about something that we can't change anyway, right? We can be putting our time and our energy to so many more important things. So forgiveness and letting go of things is ultimately a gift to ourselves, even more than the other person. Okay, so now that we've gone through mindset, setting ourselves up for technical success and behavior, I'd like to spend the last part of this year on a few targeted tips for specific relationships. Let me just see where I am on time. 1 second. Okay. Hopefully I can do this in 5 minutes. I'm going to abridge some of it. Okay, let's start with spouses. You need new information for new thinking, right? When you get married, people come in with what has been sort of set as their normal. What's your initial factory settings of normal? Whatever you grew up with in your own household. So you have two people coming from two totally different households, and they come in with their view of what's normal, right? And often that can be a source of a lot of friction and butting of heads. And I love to say, like, in marriage, you have to learn to unlearn things, right? You need to be willing to unlearn all of your own ways you come in with. Like, this is the only right way to do things, or the only right way to raise a house, or raise kids, or run a household, right? But in order to meld with each other, we have to be able to unlearn. We have to like melt a little bit to meld to meld with someone. So we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. We come in with what we think is right, but that's very hard when someone grew up in a totally different household. So often, focusing on what you're trying to accomplish together gets you out of the mindset of the onlys and gets you more to the goal at hand. When I was in college, I took a course, I think it was one of my favorite courses in college. I was at the University of Pennsylvania, and I went to the Wharton School of Business. And we took a course on negotiation. And part of the course was they would give us real cases, business cases, and one team would get all the information for this business, the other team would get all the information from the other business, and then you'd go and negotiate the terms of the deal, okay? And then afterwards, you'd be brought back in the classroom, they'd put the different deals that were negotiated on the board, and they'd tell you what really happened from the other person's side, what they knew about it, right? One of the most fascinating cases we had was about, it was a fight over an orange crop, okay? Before I go into the story, I just want to explain. There's something called positions and interests, okay? And that's part of what the negotiators use. When people are like at a loggerhead, when they can't figure out what to do, you have to move them from the positions to the interests. The positions is, we have to do this everything this way, or I need you to do this for me, or I need this, right? That's often what happens in a relationship. In this case, with the oranges, and this is a great story to drive it home, both sides are saying, I need the oranges. There is a lemon orange crop. I need it for my business. But what happens if you moved from positions to interests? And you say, well, what's your interest in the orange? Well, this company said, well, I need the orange to make, I need something from it to make a medicine. And this one was, well, I need something from it to make orange juice. So this one was able to say, wait a second, I just need something from the rind to make the medicine. And this one was able to say, well, I just need the pulp to make the juice. And they were able to figure out, oh, it wasn't just oranges, oranges, oranges. It was, we can work together and we can both get what we need by sharing all the oranges, okay? So it's the same thing in a marriage, right? Sometimes you're both saying, I need this, I need this. It has to be done this way. But if you look at, well, let's take back a step. What do you get out of that? What is your need there? What is that fulfilling, right? There's the famous, you know, there's a famous... is it the seven love languages? What is it? Four love languages. Five. Thank you, Ty. So sometimes we, you know, someone is asking for this and this and this, but why? It's because it's their love language. They're really asking for love, right? They really need that support. Okay, so that's a very important nekuda when it comes to marriages. In terms of in-law relationships, there's a beautiful piece in the Tomer Devorah. The Tomer Devorah is a gorgeous sefer that takes a pasuk in Micha that's a parallel to the Yud Gimel Midos HaRachamim al Pi Nister. Okay? And it takes all the midos from this pasuk and it expands on them. Okay? It's a great thing to learn before the Chagim. Now, when it talks about the midah of Yashuv Yerachamenu, right, having Rachamim, it has a piece about... where it says, even if your wife is terrible to you, you still need to have a karasa tov to her because she birthed your children. Okay, so I have a special, my in-laws are lovely, Baruch Hashem, I have a wonderful relationship with them, I just visited them last week. But I have a minhag that on my husband's birthday, I call them to thank them for having my husband, raising my husband, everything they did for my husband. And my husband does this with my parents, too. He usually calls them on my birthday to thank them for everything that they did. So, again, and that works even in a bad relationship. You know, to at least say, you know, look, you're someone who gave me my husband. You're someone who gave me my wife, right? I appreciate how you raised them to make them, you know, the person that, you know, is the second part of my neshama. In terms of children-in-law, it's so important to make sure that you express to them that you care about them as a person and not just as, let's say, the parent of your grandchildren. It's a little bit of the flip side, right? So instead of just saying, how are the kids, right? Like, what are the kids up to? Like, you're saying, how are you? You know, talking about their lives, engaging in what they need and want. My mother-in-law, Baruch Hashem, a wonderful woman, sometimes she takes me out to Fox's just alone to get something for me because she wants to show that she cares about me as a person. Happens to be my oldest daughter is now tall enough that she can fit in Fox's clothing, so she tries to crash our crash our periodic date. But it's just, I always appreciated that. It made me feel like she cared about me and cares about me as a specific individual. I'm assuming I have 1 minute. Oh no. Okay, I'm gonna go to one more relationship and then my ending statement. Okay. In terms of people who have a difficult relationship with their parents, I heard a story from a friend of mine who they live in Israel, and her husband had come to America to visit his parents, and it was a very difficult visit. He has a very difficult relationship with them. And on the plane back, he just said to himself, you know what? I have this difficult relationship with my parents, but ultimately, who's my real father? Hashem, right? And he kept saying to himself the pasuk that we say during the Chagim, Ki avi v'imi azavuni v'Hashem yaspeini, right? There'll be a time when my father and my mother leave. That's the natural course of life. Sometimes that's earlier than when they actually pass on. If you have a difficult relationship, it's sometimes hard to interface with them. But Hashem will always take me in. Hashem is always my father. And the story goes that he got back to Israel, and he went to Shul to bench Gomel for having done the flight across the sea. And when a man has an aliyah, they show him in the Torah, you know, the exact pasuk that the aliyah is going to start from. And when he went up for his aliyah, they took the yad and they put it on. What pasuk? Banim atam l'Hashem Elokichem. And he felt like it was a message from Hashem, a chizik from Hashem, that yes, you know, I have given you this difficult relationship with your parents, but I am your father, right? I am here for you. Okay, so I'm so sorry to have to skip ahead. I'm going to just end with, obviously, one of the most important pieces, perhaps the first thing I should have said for difficult relationship, always daven, daven, daven. Hashem can help anything and literally change anything at a moment's notice. We're told, Yeshuat Hashem Keref Ayin. Hashem can change anything in a moment's notice. And I heard this beautiful quote. The force at which an arrow is shot is directly related to how tight the bow is pulled. Similarly, the greater one's heart is contracted, the greater the forces with which one's prayers are propelled. So when you're in a difficult situation, and you dive in from that place of constriction and from pain, the prayers go farther. The prayers go right to Hashem. I give you all a bracha that you should succeed in finding growth and peace in all of your relationships and come out stronger and better from each difficult one and each positive one.